part of what I'm so focused on right now is trying to educate people and trying to talk to people that are, whether it be adoption, domestically, internationally, foster care, whatever the case is, whenever we're dealing with these children who've experienced these really hard starts to their life, we've really got to educate the people that are going to inject themselves in their lives, because you can very easily feel like you're a failure. Because, like, man, I can't figure out how to help this child, you know. Just because the child's not responding and not acting in the way we've deemed as appropriate doesn't mean you're failing.
Welcome to Project Access, the podcast that gives you full access to the world of foster and adoption care. On this show, it is my goal to introduce you to grassroots leaders in your city who are doing amazing work in child welfare. And on occasion, we'll interview people who've been in the system or who have been adopted or fostered to get their perspective. Today's guest is none other than Rush Middleton. Rush is a lay leader at WEAG, West End Assembly of God, who spearheads Intertwined Family Ministries. He's a devoted husband and father of five, two of which God brought into his family by way of adoption. His passion is infectious, and he's a true student of this work. You will be blessed by this conversation. So with no further ado, I introduce you to Rush Middleton. All right, welcome to the show. I'm David Giles, and I have with me here Rush Middleton. Rush, how you doing, buddy?
Doing great, man. Happy to be here.
Good, thanks, Dave. Good. So this is something that I found out relatively new about you, and it's that you are a police officer.
I am.
Yeah, and I had no idea that you were a police officer. Now, was being an officer, was that something that you've always wanted to do, or did you kind of decide on that after college or after school or whatever? How did that process
move? Yeah, so interesting question. So, yeah, I've been a police officer now for 16 and a half years.
Okay.
So I've been in it for a minute. And so yes and no. I feel like most little boys grow up wanting to, like, be a firefighter, be a police officer, be a soldier. You kind of pretend. You have those games you play. But I grew up in a home where my father was a law enforcement officer as well. So I saw kind of, like, some of the struggles he dealt with, some of the things that we went through as a family. And so I kind of I never really had a desire. Once I kind of got to high school, college, I wanted to pursue a different path. And that was the path that I did pursue. I went to college and studied management and marketing. Got a job out of college working in the business field. And really, September 11th, 2001 occurred, and that was a big turning point for me. I was sitting at my office when those events, you know, unfolded on the TV in front of us, and I just that very day, I just felt like, you know, there's something bigger here that I could be doing. Something that would be more meaningful to the community that I live in. And so after some deliberation and some conversations with my wife and trying to maybe rework the long-term plans that we had. I had plans of making a lot of money and having a nice house and doing all these things.
So that's going according to plan. Life is going according to plan of the police officer.
Exactly. So I think, went through the process of, you know, applying, and it's kind of a lengthy process. And believe it or not, I was hired for my first day on the job was September 11th, 2002.
Really?
So a year to the day after the 9/11 tragedies. And so that's how I ended up where I am now. And it was not a path that I anticipated or planned on. I mean, it wasn't – it was just kind of a thing that occurred because of something outside of me.
Yeah, so it's interesting because I remember where I was September 11. I think a lot of people listening will remember where they were. I did not necessarily have the feeling to, okay, wow, I want to jump into – police officer, you think the background of having the dad and the...
Yeah, I think so. I mean, all that, you know, the family history, my uncle had been a police officer for a period of time up in Washington, D.C. So, yeah, I mean, I'd been around it my whole life.
Got it.
So I think, you know, if I had grown up in a firefighter's house, I'd probably be a firefighter right now, you know? So I think I was just familiar with it. And it just, I guess I saw those images of firemen and policemen running into this tragic scenario that was occurring, and I just in my gut, I'm like, I wish I was in New York right now. You know, and I think that was when it clicked in me that I was like, you know, maybe I'm on the wrong path. If my gut response is I want to go there, then maybe I should use that. And obviously, I was in Virginia. I wasn't going to be able to run up there real quick. But maybe I could use that here. And so, yeah, that's really what turned everything around for me and put me where I am today.
Absolutely. And I think that speaks a lot to your heart. One, to say that there's a burning building and I want to run towards that.
Right.
You know, that is
not normal.
It's not definitely not normal. It's not the initial reaction of most people. But I think that's what first responders, that's why they're different. That's why they're special. That's why we cherish them in our communities because they have that, you know, knee-jerk reaction to say, I want to run towards danger. You know, so I commend you for that. And the interesting thing about Rush is that, you know, when you meet him, he's this unassuming guy. Not really. So he has this big beard, and I have a very scraggly beard. Okay?
You're working on it,
so
though, right?
I'm working
on
it for the last 40 years. I've been working on this beard. But Ruffy, he's this mountain-looking man. He's very fit, and you see him, it's like, ah, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
He's a police officer because that's what he does. However, I just learned that was not always the case. Rush was telling me about a story right before we hit record, and I was like, Rush, I need you to go into this to let the people know about this. So tell them about the instance that made you think that, all right, I am not fit enough.
I'm not fit
to
enough,
do this
right?
Job.
Yeah. So I think like I mentioned before, I've always maintained some level of fitness. I've always enjoyed running or something like that to a degree, but it's easy to get kind of lazy with that, and everybody's experienced that, right? No matter what. And especially working as a police officer, doing shift work and weird hours and stuff, I'd kind of just let some of that slide. And so the turning point to get me back into the gym was I went on a call the call for service was a trespassing call. So somebody had called and said this guy was in their apartment and wouldn't leave. And I got there, and they were right. He would not leave. So we had a conversation about the fact he needed to leave, and one thing led to the next. And before you know it, we were in a pretty good scrum, and so we were on the floor.
Yeah,
we were moving some furniture. We were into some walls and making a pretty big mess around the place, trying to make sure that I got out of there safely and got him into handcuffs, and we could get him out of this apartment. And so, long story short, at one point he had me my back was up against the wall, and he was in front of me, and I had him kind of like in a bear hug, and he said to me in the middle of a fight, he said, "You're going to need someone a lot stronger than you to take me to jail." And my initial thought was, well, he's probably right that I'm in a little bit of trouble here. Luckily, we were able to get the situation under control when I was able to get him in handcuffs. But it was a kind of a wake-up call for me to say, man, this isn't just about trying to look good or just to be in shape for, you know, so I can, you know, run a fast mile and a half time or anything like that.
Right,
it was like, it really was like, I need this just to stay alive out here,
survive.
To be safe,
right.
And to make sure that I'm home, I go home to my family. And so that, I credit that guy.
Right.
I mean,
right.
It was not, I wish that hadn't happened, but I, mm-hmm. you know, the fight mm-hmm. was not the fun part. But
right.
afterwards, I give him a lot of credit for just kind of waking me up. And it, mm-hmm. ever since then, I've been pretty dedicated. I still have my dips in the commitment to the gym, but I try.
Right. So, you said you got him into the car. What was that transition?
Because the whole story is kind of cool. I mean, the way it ended is obviously this was a pretty intense, adrenaline-filled moment.
Absolutely.
He was not a big fan of me. Very honestly here, I was not a big fan of him at the time. And got him into the car in handcuffs, and we were getting ready to drive to the jail. And I just felt the need to say something to him. That was more than just, you know, you have the right to remain silent. And so I just said to him, I said, hey, just before we go anywhere, I'm going to let you know right now, I forgive you for everything that happened up there. That I know it wasn't personal, that you were fighting the uniform, you weren't fighting the man, and that I'm going to treat you with respect going forward. I'm just asking that you do the same for me. And so it was like a little bit of silence. And this grown man who was bigger and stronger than me, all of a sudden I see tears coming down inside of his face. And he just said, I've never had anybody talk to me like that.
Right.
And so it was a powerful moment for me. And, you know, I told you, I don't know where that guy ended up, where he is today. And so I don't know if that conversation turned around his life or anything. But it was important for me, too, because it showed me and reminded me, which is easy to do this in police work. You can get jaded to stuff. And so it was reminding me that, I mean, he's a human being, and he needs grace, he needs forgiveness, even when he's offended me directly.
Right, right.
And so it was, and he needs that because that's what I need, right? You know what
right,
I mean?
Right.
And so it was a powerful experience all the way around, and helped me try to think through the way I deal with people in that through that light as much as I can. It's not always easy to do. But that was an interesting night.
When you talked about your wife, so I'm really interested to know how that conversation went down. Of honey, I don't think I want to make a lot of money.
I tried to put that traumatic conversation in the
that was more traumatic
files.
Than being wrestled.
So yeah,
to
I mean, you know, my wife is fabulous, wonderful, absolutely. Wonderful wife, wonderful mother, and has been very supportive. Of me in a host of ways, but yeah, definitely it was tough. It was a tough conversation and tough thing for her to accept. And I think it took some time for her to even accept it, to kind of learn like, okay, this was the path we were on, and now all of a sudden this the rug's being pulled out from underneath us, and we're going to totally change the way we live. And so yeah, it was a big challenge. But she's been supportive of me and has helped me along the way, and it hasn't always been easy. I mean, this line of work is not always the most conducive to family life, and so she's had to deal with a lot of the mess that goes along with it. But yeah, it was not an easy thing for her to swallow. But she's been there for me, and I certainly wouldn't have been wouldn't be where I am today without her. In that support, because it is a job where I feel like you really need that. You need that support,
absolutely,
when you come home. So
yeah, you don't want to fight your battles in the field of battles out at work and then come home and fight
the ones that really matter. Right. You don't want to. Yeah, absolutely.
Not in that sense. Anyway.
No.
Not on different teams anyway.
Right.
You
want
to be on the same team fighting those battles.
Yes.
Absolutely. So so you guys, you have adopted.
Yes,
correct?
That's correct.
And how many? So tell us about that dynamic of. Children, how many children you have?
Yeah, so my wife and I have 5 kids. We had 2 biological children first, and then we adopted my daughter, and then a year and a half, 2 years later, adopted my son. Both of them are from China. And then we just recently had a biological little boy that was born about 3 months ago.
Congratulations.
So thank you very much. So it's a busy house. So my oldest son is he's 14 and a half.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So we go from 14 and a half to 3 months. So we're experiencing kind of all the different levels of parenting all at one time, which I think is awesome because
it really is.
You deal with some of the teenage strife issues, but some of those cool conversations you're having with them as they get older, into middle school and high school. But then you're still getting those baby snuggles too. So we're getting to experience all that stuff at one time.
Right.
But yeah, so that's kind of what our family looks like. So it's a little bit of a blend of types of people and ages and everything and culture. So it's really cool.
Okay, so your adoption from China, real quick, what was that process like as far
Once again, no plans to adopt. That was not something my wife and I ever talked about. I mean, we wanted to have kids. We talked about having kids, but never talked about adoption or anything like that. And we really kind of stumbled into it, honestly, David.
Yeah.
It wasn't
so how
like,
did you
– Yeah, so my wife is a nurse by trade, and she worked with another nurse down at the college down in the city as a nurse. And – they adopted internationally from China, and just kind of so we through that friendship kind of experienced a little bit of it. She experienced it much more than me, just working with this young lady every day, and a good Christian family, and they were just overwhelmed by this whole adoption process and how amazing it was, this daughter they brought into their home. And so my wife and I were just around that. And over time, I think as we just kind of saw that played out in front of us individually, we didn't have a conversation about it at all.
Really?
So I think individually we were just thinking about it. And one day we were actually painting our dining room in our house. And I can't remember if I was on the ladder. I think my wife was on the ladder.
Okay.
And I said to her, I said, hey, if you ever consider maybe adopting.
Right.
And the reason I think she was on the ladder, because I think she almost fell off, because she was like, oh my goodness. Like, but I've been terrified to say anything for fear you would just be like, no,
right,
and I was like, I've been kind of holding it in because I didn't know how you would feel about it. And so that's how the process started. And
communication between husband and wife.
Exactly. And we did not know what we were doing or what we were getting into. We just had this feeling of like, hey, This is how we want to grow our family. And so that's how the process really started on that day. We didn't know what it looked like or what it was going to be like, but that's how we got right. We got on the journey.
Yeah. Now most families don't have a come to Jesus moment in that fashion while they're painting. Most couples,
right.
It
right.
usually goes in the opposite direction.
Yeah.
You
know, yeah.
You're painting. Why
yeah.
Did you put
yeah.
That
exactly.
Color?
That's a lot of domestic start right there at home improvement projects, right?
Not yeah. life into living into the kingdom usually does yeah. not. It's not preceded by the story of, well, my wife and I were painting.
Yeah, it's an interesting way to get it going.
Absolutely. So what were the ages of your, were they both daughters, you said?
So, no, I adopted my daughter. She was, they're both almost 2 years old when we okay. adopted them. So we adopted my daughter first, mm-hmm. And then went back to China a year and a half, 2 years later, and adopted my son.
Okay.
And he was also just about 2 years old when we got him. So they had both spent the first 2 years in a Chinese orphanage, mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, and that was, it was the whole process has been so eye-opening,
right.
And
absolutely.
So just
absolutely.
Life-changing, mm-hmm. Faith-changing in terms of all that stuff. So yeah, that, but mm-hmm. that is, it's just been an amazing journey, man. It really
yeah,
has.
For sure. So I think that's a good segue into kind of the intertwined
okay.
Ministries that you do at WEAG, West End Assembly of God. So, tell us a little bit about Intertwine and kind of how the story of you guys adopting yourselves
right.
and then working that into kind of some of the culture of the church that you attend now.
Yeah, so we have been at West End for a long time. And my wife and I basically since we got married, but I've been there my whole life. So my church turns 50 years old today this year, and my mom was one of the founding members of the church. So we've been there our whole lives, and but we went to China and adopted my daughter, and as we were kind of in that process, an international adoption, long kind of drawn-out process, mm-hmm. and we learned when we first started that we didn't know what we didn't know, okay?
Right,
so we were overwhelmed with information and didn't realize really the significance of the problem of vulnerable children in across the globe and even in our own community. We just didn't know the things that we wished that we had known. And
right.
So we went to China, got my daughter, and really learned a lot about children who have lived through traumatic experiences and the difficulties that presents for them, for the transition into their forever family and all the challenges that come with that. And it was a difficult time for us as a family. I mean, just trying to navigate that. And we didn't feel like we knew where to go to get help or to get the support that we felt like we needed. And it wasn't because the church wasn't encouraging or they weren't supportive. It didn't feel like anybody understood what we were going through, and it also didn't feel like anybody kind of warned us what might come. And so we went through this adoption journey with her and struggled a lot, but then made the decision to go back and do it again. And so we went back and got my son, brought him home. But I guess I'll back up a minute. Just while we were in China getting my son, we were able to go visit his orphanage. We weren't able to do that with my daughter, so this was a pretty cool experience for us. And, you know, China's got all kinds of regulations and stipulations to how they do things. And so with my son, they allowed us to go. And so we had already adopted him, and we were able to go back to his orphanage. So we'd had him for a couple of days, and we walked into the orphanage, and I'm holding him, and they take us into this room, and it's just a sea of cribs. I mean, it's beyond belief the number of children that were in this orphanage. And so I'm holding my son, and they point to this crib, and they're like, "This was your son's crib that he lived in." And I mean, it was just just overwhelming experience. And I just I felt so excited that I had my son,
mm-hmm.
and that he was no longer
mm-hmm.
an orphan,
mm-hmm.
right? He was not an orphan anymore.
Absolutely.
He had a mom, he had a dad who were with him, but you look out across this vastness.
So many others.
And you're just like, you know, God, what am I going to do about,
right.
I mean, this is great. My son is my son, you know, and
absolutely.
I've got him. But what about all these other kids? And mm-hmm. and so I think we both left China that time with, my wife and I both left just feeling like, heavy, like wow,
right.
like we've already learned a lot over the past few years,
mm-hmm.
but
mm-hmm.
just I think an additional burden that something has to be done, and went back to our church, and I was in the Sunday morning service, and we were singing a song, and I don't remember the song now, but the song was referring to orphans and caring for orphans,
mm-hmm.
and I'm not a big like Jesus came down and spoke to me directly guy. Like I don't have a lot of those types of stories.
Right.
But I really felt God was speaking to me in the middle of that song, and he was saying, stop singing. Stop singing about this stuff, and let's do something about it here. Like, we're not gonna empty out that orphanage in China, but we're gonna do something here. And it was, I immediately left that service and went home and fired off an email to our senior pastor at the time, who I had a great, grew up around him, had a great relationship with him, and met with him and kind of just kind of explained what I felt was this burning desire in our heart. And that was kind of the start of, at the time, what we called We Orphan Care, because we didn't know what to call it. It's, at right. West End, we put We in front of everything. So we just said We Orphan Care. And that's where it started. And it really kind of, so that was probably 2012, 2013. My wife and I, once again, had no idea what we were doing in terms of the ministry with this stuff. But that really was the initial idea was we were going to try to support families that were adopting and just try to educate people the best we could and really just try to be some type of a network for people.
To be there.
And we, that was our experience with was international adoption. So that's kind of what the focus of it was at first.
Right. So I'm going to take a step back.
Yeah.
You mentioned that when you were going through the process, you brought your child home and you didn't know what you didn't know. And I think our situation was very similar. I and my wife may have known,
right.
but I had no idea what we were getting ourselves into. Emotionally, I had no idea what we were getting ourselves into. I just didn't know what I didn't know. What were some of the things that you found out throughout the process?
Yeah, so you often hear in the adoption foster care community the importance of being trauma informed, right? Mm-hmm. We were trauma uninformed, right? We did not know. I think. I mean, we obviously knew there would be challenges. I mean, we weren't naive to think that it was going to be like a movie and we would just walk in and everything would be sweet and so we knew there would be some trials and things, but I just don't think we were ready for the impact that this kind of a move would have on our daughter. This idea of just taking this kid who was from an orphanage, who was abandoned, and saying like, okay, well, now she's here in America with us, she'll be happy. Like, you know, that's not how it works. And it doesn't matter how sweet the living arrangement is or how loving the parents are, when a child has experienced trauma, there's a grieving process they're going through. There's anger. You know, there's frustration, there's all kinds of things that go along with it that we just didn't know, and we didn't know how to handle it. And I think we had been successful in parenting our two biological kids, and I think part of it was some pride that we had of, like, we know what we're doing, right?
Right.
I mean,
right.
we just figure this out. Like, you know, it'll take her a little while to catch on, and she's got to, you know, be around some English-speaking people and get used to the time change, all that kind of stuff, and we would get her on board, and we just... we weren't prepared, I don't think, for some of the hardships that she was going through, like emotionally, things that she was struggling with, and it was just an eye-opening experience. It's like, man, we really don't know what we're doing here. Like, and I think we very honestly we questioned, like, man, what was this a mistake? What did we do something were we not really being called to do this? Like, and that was some real moments, man. But so and I think. That's why part of what I'm so focused on right now is trying to educate people and trying to talk to people that are, whether it be adoption, domestically, internationally, foster care, whatever the case is, whenever we're dealing with these children who've experienced these really hard starts to their life, we've really got to educate the people that are going to inject themselves in their lives, because you can very easily feel like you're a failure. Because, like, man, I can't figure out how to help this child, you know. Just because a child's not responding and not acting in the way we've deemed that's appropriate doesn't mean you're failing, right?
Exactly.
I'm not sure who the author is, but when he talks a lot about read recently about foster care and adoption, the success is in your yes, right? You said yes.
Right.
You're succeeding, right? And we have to not let every little trial we face be like, okay, well, I failed and this was a huge mistake.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, it was a learning curve, and that's really one of the main reasons that we started at the time. We Orphan Care was like, we want to just tell people like our story,
right?
Like, be real with people.
Right.
This is not a Disney movie,
it's not.
And it can be challenging. It's beautiful, but it's not. It's not the you know. It can be a mess, and you've got to be willing to step into the mess
and stay
and
in
stay
the
in the mess.
Stay
right.
in the mess.
Right.
And I think you hit the nail on the head. You said when you've raised two kids already, right? So when you do that, you raise your own kids. They've been a part of your family since conception. So right. There's you know that child literally in and out. You understand everything about that child. You've watched them grow. You've watched them develop. You know their nuances, sometimes even better than themselves. You know when the meltdown is coming. You know what is going to give them joy. And you say you brought an adoptive child. You miss all of that.
Right.
Not to mention the time that they were supposed to have that, they've been without a parent in some cases, or you know, in some cases, a destructive parent destructive parents.
Right.
You know, and so all of that development that they should have, it doesn't matter what you're bringing to the table, quite honestly. If you don't understand them where they are at that moment and live into that and to help them through that and basically take everything off of yourself, like it is not about you.
Absolutely,
in this
right.
moment, it is all
yeah,
about
you've
the
got
kid.
you've got to get that mindset gone. Mm-hmm. Right, you
right.
know, you could be A+ parents, but it's going to be a different strategy. You're mm-hmm. still the same parents. It's just
the same parents.
Okay, I've got a couple of different options and a couple of different books that I'm going to go this route with this child because of the experience. If you try to parent all these kids the same exact way, it's not going to work. You've got to parent this child in this moment. Okay,
right.
And I think yeah. we didn't understand that at first.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I look now, you know, my daughter who, you know, she's 10 years old. So, I mean, she's been with us now for 8 years. And you look back, you know, I mean, the strides and the changes and just the beauty of her at age 10 is remarkable. And, the impact really that she's had on our lives is amazing. But yeah, you've got to be – so you can't say, okay, well, I'm going to adopt or foster and I want results that are just this unbelievable success story of my life in the next 6 months. Now, you've got to go into it knowing like, hey, this is a journey and there's going to be a lot of ups and a lot of downs and some mess and some brokenness and tragedy. But at the end, you know, we're looking for beauty. And that end may not be 8 years like it's been for our daughter, right? It may not be in this life. It may be that beauty comes. You know, we're representing Jesus to these kids, and it's a challenge. But I think the more that we talk about it, the more confident we are going into it, and the more we know there's other people that are out here that are experiencing the same thing, and that we're not alone. That we don't have to do this by ourselves. And I think a lot of times when tragedy comes. Difficulty comes, we circle the wagons, we close that group around us, and we say, okay, we're going to figure this out. And part of that is defense mechanism, right? Part of it is might be, you know, you're scared, but I do think a lot of it's just pride. You're like, I'm going to fix it. I'm going to fix it. I'm going to take care of this. You know, I don't want to be embarrassed. I've been talking about this adoption for years. I'm telling everybody about it, and everybody's patting me on the back about it and saying, oh, this is great.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not going to say, well, we're not doing real good, okay?
If you
SOS, send me
right.
some help. We don't want to do right. that. We want to fix it. And we have to, I think, as adoptive and foster parents, we have to say, okay, we're going to open this up, and we're going to let some people that want to step
right.
into this mess
Absolutely.
And be with us.
Absolutely. And is that what intertwined is? Is that kind of the basis?
Yeah, that,
the
root exactly.
of what
I think that's what we're trying to do. So as we kind of have learned more, over,
mm-hmm.
you know, since
mm-hmm.
since we started – this ministry, we just recently renamed it and relaunched
mm-hmm.
it to Intertwined Family.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea of that is, yes, it's to – the name comes from a conversation I had with Jed Medifine.
Mm-hmm. Great guy.
Yeah, from Christian Alliance for Orphans. And he was provided me with some great counsel and advice. And he made this comment about, you know, the beauty of all this and is when the brokenness – and the beauty of these vulnerable children
mm-hmm.
is intertwined into our families and intertwined into our churches. And I just was like, man, that's exactly what
right.
we're trying to capture at our church. That's what I want to communicate to people. And
mm-hmm.
so we relaunched it under this new name with the idea of, you know, we're going to try to educate
mm-hmm.
Families, educate people that are interested in foster care, interested
mm-hmm.
in adoption. Also educate just the church in general about it. We want to support families that are adopting and fostering and come around them, wrap
mm-hmm.
around them. And then we also want just to be an advocate
right.
for vulnerable children. And that can look a host of different ways. That's not
right.
just through foster and adoption. There's a million
mm-hmm.
ways we can advocate for children that are vulnerable and that are in need. So that's kind of the the three, I guess, pillars of. We want to educate, we want to support, and we want to advocate.
Absolutely. So how are things kind of, you guys just relaunched, what are things looking like
now? So yeah, I would say it's just absolutely exciting time right now, as we're still kind of at that ground level of the transition from We Orphan Care to Intertwined Family and trying to build it. So we've now developed a leadership team, which is huge because for so many years, I think, and I don't think this is abnormal in a lot of ministries like this. Mm-hmm. It's like one or two people that have this passion that just go in and they're just doing all the stuff by themselves. And it's so easy to get discouraged and disappointed because things aren't happening. And so now we've invited people in. We've kind of released some of that pride of ourselves. Like we're trying to do this, trying to build this ministry. Mm-hmm. And so we've got a leadership team. We've just, the ministry has now moved under the leadership of a pastor as well. Mm-hmm. So there's a pastor at our church that's now supporting us and giving us some of the things that we need to be successful at a church. And then there's a lot of just things on the horizon. So a lot of opportunities for our people to get plugged in, to either to serve families that are in the foster care and adoption community or to learn more through some events of like, hey, this is what I want to do. And then the goal is that as we have some of these events in the next couple of months is to also develop teams to wrap around these families, to support them, to provide them with the things they need to be successful as foster parents and as adoptive parents.
All right, cool. So I trolled your Facebook, and you wrote this.
Everybody's trolling these
days. I'm a troll.
Yeah.
But you said that you don't have to be a foster or adoptive parent to follow along, and I think you were in reference to the intertwine in the fostering and adoption world. In other words, I don't feel God calling me to foster adopt. Someone else can do that. But we are all called to care for the orphans. How does Intertwined Ministries provide opportunities for those who don't feel that they are, called to foster and adopt?
Right.
How can they be a part of? You kind of explained that a little bit.
Huge, an important question, I think, for anyone who's in like foster care adoption ministries. Mm-hmm. Because I think what can happen a lot of times, and this is my experience, is that you've got the families at the church or whatever that are into foster care and adoption, and you very rarely find a family that's like, "Yeah, we foster, we've adopted." Yeah. It's like, "I got to talk to you right now about foster and adoption. You don't understand the crisis in this world." And so you've got these, and you're like, "Oh man, look, this family, they're like, they won't stop talking about it, and they've adopted all these kids, and look at how big their family is." Mm-hmm. They're like, and so I think a lot of times it makes people we're not doing it intentionally, but I think it makes people say, "Well, I can't have five kids in my house. There's no way I'm doing that. Or I can't afford to do X, or I can't open myself up to this, and or I'm at a stage of life where that doesn't make sense." And those are all valid things. So I think sometimes we can overwhelm people, we're like, "Oh man," and we bring it up all the time, and we can make people feel like this is too much for me.
Right.
Good luck to you and your ministry, but it's not for me. So I think it's important for us to try to help people understand that it really is about getting everybody involved at some level. And so I think what we're trying to do at WEAG and through Intertwined Family, it's similar to, I think, what a lot of other churches that we're collaborating with, is trying to build this model of, yes, there are families that are called to foster and adopt children. But just as important to those families are building the support network around them. So we want to build families that provide respite care. People that can say, they kind of almost serve as like aunts and uncles to these kids that are in foster care, that come in and say, "Hey, one week in a month, that child's coming to our house," and it gives the foster care parents a break and a moment to kind of regroup and breathe, but also gives that foster child another experience of a healthy family. And then we want to have families that come around these foster families that do support and mentoring. So you're like a support mentor. So you're mentoring the foster kid. Maybe you're taking them to the park. Maybe you're going to a Flying Squirrels baseball game, and you're going to "Hey, come along with us." You do things like that, and then you're also supporting the foster family. So whether that's bringing meals or cutting grass or whatever, those are things you can do. But even beyond that, there's a lot of things you can do that don't even require you to leave your house. Obviously praying for these families, and praying for ministries at your church, and praying for agencies that are working in with these kids, praying for your local social services workers,
doing things like that.
Yeah, absolutely. That's like the front line workers, man. And so I think doing things like that, and it's easy for us to say the Christian angel. Just pray for this, right? But it's so important. And we want it with Intertwined Family, we're really actually trying, as we're building this structure, is trying to almost delegate certain people, like, we want your role to be prayer. We're not saying, well, I can only pray. Like, we want that to be what you do. That is your service to this ministry.
Because that's probably the most important thing.
Yes, absolutely,
thing,
right.
Because that's
right. We got
to
release
God
yes.
to intercede.
It's not our success so, that we're absolutely. trying. We're not trying to be in. So I think that's super important. And then another thing that is super important is giving mm-hmm. and supporting ministries through gifts, you know, through financial giving. Because I think, you know, sometimes we diminish the importance of that. We're like, oh, right. well, all I can do is write a check. Well, man, that check is huge because yes. it enables the ministry to do things
right.
For families,
Absolutely.
For, you know, for building a structure that mm-hmm. is mm-hmm. empowering to people and empowering to parents. And we can do training. We can do all those things. And if we don't have the support financially to do it, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, it's hard when you go to a
Pretty
church
hard.
And say, we want to start this ministry, and I need this many thousands of dollars, and I need this many volunteers.
Right, right.
If people are giving and supportive in that way, you go in and say, hey, look, we've got the resources we need. Mm-hmm. You know, we can make this happen. And so I think that's important. And it's just – it's there's a lot of little things you can do mm-hmm. to support these families. And it can be – you know, I think we will say, like, oh, well, this family's adopted or fostered 7 kids, and I'm going to make lasagna? And it seems like it's very, you know, unimportant. But I can guarantee
Those
you it's
eat.
Important, right? It's important because the idea of you're in this situation where you're in this daily struggle and somebody shows up to clean your house or take your car somewhere and wash it
right.
or, you know, provide a meal mm-hmm. or anything like that, mm-hmm. it's huge. And those little things are just as important to this whole game of making it a success. Because if all we do is just say, well, if you have to foster or adopt or you're not important –
Right.
We're eliminating the vast majority of people. Right. Now, I mean, it is important. Some people do have to foster and adopt, right?
Right.
We can't just say if everybody's making lasagna, then that's not gonna it's not gonna be successful either. But
Absolutely.
We don't want to eliminate Absolutely. People and say, mm-hmm. "Hey, you're not important here." Yeah. I firmly believe 100% of the population at any given church mm-hmm. can play a role in this. And I don't care if you're, you know, in the oldest person in the pew mm-hmm. to the kids ministry folks. It involves everybody. We don't want to have – we really don't want – with Intertwined Family, we're not trying to build a multi-generational model. We really want intergenerational. I want, you know, a foster family that's 35 years old who support family 60, who's got, you know, a young adult that's coming in to do respite care. Like, that's what we want. We want this to really be a reflection – of the body of Christ, and everybody is playing a
Absolutely.
Role in helping the kids. Right. So,
and more importantly, I think everybody is called to play a role.
Yes.
Not everybody is called to, and I had this confusion, you know, James 1:27 says, you know, to care for the orphan.
Right.
And when I initially started this process, I'm like, man, James 1:27, it
right.
says you have to foster and adopt. It says we're supposed to do this.
Right.
And I'm looking, I'm like, uh-oh, that's not what that says.
Nah,
you
nah.
know, but it does say to care for the orphan, and that is the church's responsibility. I think everybody, no one's excluded from that,
yes.
from that process. You may be able to have an out on the,
right.
the actual fostering, adopting, and I think certain people are called to do that. Hopefully it's those ones who are ambitious, and they are
right.
Not necessarily ambitious, but they are excited about
right.
sharing it. The ones that you talk about, hey, you got to do this. Like, you wouldn't understand it. The crisis. We need this. You know, hopefully it's those families, the ones that are in it for the long haul. You know, it's those guys that are adopting and fostering it and stepping into that role.
Yes.
But everyone else can – you can take your gifts and your talents, and you can support those people because – like you said, even if you do go to a trauma-informed class, even if you do read the latest book on fostering adoption, nothing is going to prepare you for
right.
when that child
Come
steps into
the door,
your house
right.
and life hits you in the face.
Yeah.
And it is
you need that support.
Out of,
yeah, and I think we just have to be careful not to overwhelm people with the like how big of a problem this is, and this is so, you know, we don't want to smother people mm-hmm. and make them feel like they can't be a part of it. I mean, I really think it's super important that we're honest about what's going on in the world. We don't want to minimize the crisis mm-hmm. that exists in foster care and in the just vulnerable children around the world. We want to be real about that, but we also don't want to make people feel like, well, this is too big for me.
Absolutely,
you know.
Because the truth of the matter is that the it's not really an insurmountable goal that we're looking at to get these kids taken care of.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's really one of the things that is motivating about it for me is that this is a solvable problem. It's not easily solvable. It's not like we just say, okay, we just ABC done, and we got the problem solved.
Right.
But if we do the things through education and supporting and advocating, the local church is the solution. This whole thing was built 2,000 plus years ago, right? The structure for this these ministries was already there.
Right.
It's just a matter of, I think, us doing a good job of communicating the message and in communicating to people, this is how the problem can be solved. I mean, and I think, are we going to eliminate vulnerable children in our community? No, we're not going to eliminate the need for the support systems and networks for these kids. But we can really, really have a major impact on it.
Absolutely.
And especially like through things like this and the collaboration that we're seeing amongst the local churches right now is probably what I'm most excited about, because it's not about church A and church B and church C and us competing to be like, well, we got 3 foster families and they only got 2, but this other church down the road's got 7, so we're we got to catch up. No, it's about, hey, what are we doing together?
What are we doing together?
Let's get these kids out of this system of brokenness, and let's show them family, let's show them Jesus, and we know there's going to be struggles along the way, but if we're in it together, and even amongst other churches, we can partner together, and just the energy that builds from that, it goes back to you're not alone.
Absolutely.
You're not alone in this journey. There's other people that are going through the same stuff. Yeah.
We definitely can do more together, and that's what excites me as well, because the interesting thing about our dynamic is that I do work at a church. I am currently, and you are a police officer.
That's right.
You're a lay member.
Definitely not a church.
Definitely not a church. A ministry, maybe, but not a church as we would think of it. But I'm overly excited to see, when someone who is not necessarily a staff member of a church comes and says, we need to do this, and then takes the reins of it and says, all right, here's what I need.
Yeah.
And working on staff, you get hundreds of people
saying
we have to save the whales, we have to save
everything.
And everybody has their own important thing. But not everybody wants to. A lot of those things ends up in the staff member's lap, and now it's one more thing.
Absolutely. Because I think everybody sitting in a pew, knows better how to run the what's going on.
Just in the Super Bowl last night. Hey, come on,
yes,
golf, do this.
Don't
man.
Get me going on the Super Bowl. But so I think it's important for people to realize that you don't have to wait for a pastor or a staff member to say, here's the program we're going to run and we're going to do this to help, in the foster care community. It can be very simple things that we can do, and it can be someone who's not on staff. And
absolutely.
I think it's important that we remember what you're talking about. I mean, that the staff members of these churches get bombarded. Every day there's new opportunities and new things that people are throwing at them. And if we're gonna throw this at them, to go into a meeting with a pastor,
demanding.
Right, not demanding. I was going to say maybe not feel – we can be almost angry. Why are we not doing something about this problem? And, if you really love Jesus, you would do this. And so I think we can – because we're so passionate.
Absolutely.
And that passion can come across as, this person needs to take a little bit – calm down a little bit. And, you're not going to get the results you want if you go into it like that. But also – and what I've tried to do with our pastors is present them with – a model. This is what we want to do. I'm not asking you to do it. We'll do it. And we might need some help to make some things work. But if you're thinking about trying to get something like this started at a church, don't just go into a room and say, hey, have you read James 1:27? Because if you have, you should be doing something about this. It's like, hey, here's what we want to build. And I think what we learned, and I wish I would have known this years ago, several years ago when we tried to start this, was I wish I had collaborated more back then with other churches to learn, this is what they're doing. Okay, well, we don't have to recreate this, right? Let's go talk to this church. Let's talk to this pastor. Let's talk to Dave. Let's talk to Rush. Let's see what they're doing. They can probably tell us what works there and what works and didn't work. And not that every church has to have the exact same thing. You work on what works best in your building and your people, but we don't have to recreate it. And the more that we can present to staff and pastors that, We're not putting an extra thing on you. Right. We're telling you how we're going to serve, and mm-hmm. all we need is your blessing and prayer and absolutely. A little bit of support. And I think you can. It's a hard lesson to learn because, like I said, we do come at it with so much passion sometimes. But
absolutely, and we are about out of time.
All right.
So I've thoroughly enjoyed.
Yeah,
talking
ma'am.
To you.
I love
every
it, love
time
it.
I get together with you, man. I learn something new. I love your passion about what you're doing. I have a couple quick, rapid fire questions, and then I will let you go.
Go for
stuff.
It.
So what are you currently reading right now?
All right, yeah. So I love this question. I'm like passionate about reading. My number one activity outside of raising kids, I guess, right. is I like to read. So right now, a couple of books I'm reading. One is by Alan Cross, When Heaven and Earth Collide. It's about just the historical nature of the evangelical Southern evangelical movement and race and culture and how that's played. Great, great book. I'm also reading a fabulous book, if you're interested in foster care, adoption community, by Jason Johnson, which is called Reframing Foster Care. Very practical, easy to digest book, and highly recommend it to anybody who's even thinking about getting involved in ministry or doing anything like that. And then finally, I love history, so I'm reading a book right now called The Triumph and Tragedy of Lyndon Johnson by James Califano. He was a member of the staff that was in the White House, and so if you know anything about that time frame, it was kind of Vietnam, Civil Rights Movement going on, a lot of stuff going on. So I love historical stuff. So that's what I got on my shelf right now. And a bunch of others that are in a stack ready to read. So.
All right. Now, being a Richmonder your entire life, you probably have seen the food scene kind of change. What is your favorite restaurant?
Man, this is a tough one for me because I like all food pretty much.
Yeah,
so like I'm very easy to please. So I love a lot of the local places too. But there's a Thai restaurant near me, just down the street from my house called Thai Top 10.
Okay.
And it makes some just mean Thai food, man. That's just delicious. So my kids all love that stuff,
oh, really?
Too. Yeah.
All right.
So we're easy to please when it comes to food.
Got it.
So
my family is not.
Yeah.
Not my kids anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. So who is a huge influence in your life?
I would say the easiest answer to that question would be my father. Just has been a great example of a Christian head of a household and has provided a lot of leadership for our family over the years. He also was a law enforcement officer for 46 years.
Wow.
And prior to that served in the Army in Vietnam. So he has a long history of service to the community. And it's just been a great influence on my life. I mean, but I think in terms of spiritually, theologically, I mean, some guys that I just absolutely love are John Piper. Love him. David Platt. Russell Moore is another guy who adoptive dad. Actually, so is John Piper, and so is David Platt. They're actually all three adoptive adoptive parents. So great influences on me in terms of this ministry and just my faith in general.
Absolutely. If you had one saying, and this could be our parting comment here, what would be one saying that you live by, one mantra, if you
will? Yeah, my wife and I, we came up with this as part of like home improvement projects. We bought a house that needs a lot of work, and we kind of enjoy it, but we're not great at it. Like, we watched like maybe one too many episodes of HGTV or something and thought we could do stuff. So I think we picked this up from one of those shows or somewhere along the lines, and it doesn't have to be perfect to be beautiful. And so that applies to when you're making a cut sometimes, you know, or building something in your house or painting the room or whatever.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be perfect to be beautiful. And so I kind of think that applies to a whole lot of other things in life too.
Absolutely.
You know, so
absolutely.
Your family doesn't have to be perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Our parenting doesn't have to be perfect. We can make mistakes. We can mess up. We can do things that aren't perfect. The goal is that, you know, in the end, this is a beautiful thing we're doing. And
absolutely.
Even if from the outside looking in, it doesn't look pretty,
mm-hmm.
inside we know that Jesus is beautiful. We're a reflection of that. And what we're doing for these kids is beautiful. So I think that's a kind of the thing that I would hang on my wall if I had to.
Sounds good. All right. So how do people get in touch with you, Rush? How would they be able to find you if they needed you? They wanted information about Intertwined.
The easiest way probably, you can check us out on any of the social media platforms, Intertwined Family. Mm-hmm. If you look us up on Facebook or Instagram or Twitter, you can search for us and find us on there. And we try to stay pretty up to date and constant with stuff on there. And then you can always email us at intertwinedfamily foxfamilyfoster@gmail.com. And yeah, more than happy. Don't have to be a member of our church. If you have any interest or questions or anything, man, we're, like I said, we're all about trying to collaborate and solve this problem, which we can do.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Russ, for being a part of the show. I've had a great time.
Yeah,
man,
absolutely.
And I can't wait to get together again. Maybe we can check out one of these Thai restaurants.
Yeah, today. Yeah. Let's do it. Get some Thai and then some coffee.
That's right.
If you enjoyed that conversation, be sure to join Rush, Virginia Kids, Belong President Janet Kelly, and President of CAFO, Christian Alliance for Orphans, Jed Medifin, on May 23rd at WEAG for a Next Steps event from 6:30 to 8:30. Child care and dinner will be provided, and you can register at Intertwined Family Next Steps. That's Intertwined Family Next Steps. Eventbrite.com. Hope to see you there. Hey, before you go, be sure to check us out on Facebook and Instagram. Just search Project Access RVA right there in your search tool. Share your thoughts on the show or topics you'd like to hear more about or topics you'd like for me to shut up about. Or if you want to just give a shout out to someone who you know that's doing amazing work in the world of foster care and adoption, I would love to connect with you more on those platforms. Anyway, I'm David Giles. Until next time.